Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart. Check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game, amen. No rain on the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game, amen. No rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined, as always, by JD, by God, Oliva. How you doing, JD?
As always has been, not a real thing these last couple weeks. Yeah. As frequently, maybe, sometimes, well, I don't know. I think my internet's working better right now. We'll find out. I made some adjustments. We'll find out how this goes.
Yeah. We'll see. It's at some point you're either going to drop off, or like a train is going to go right by the house.
Well, the train's going to that. I can't control the train. The train is going to come by the house at some point, because I live in Hillbillyville, USA.
Yeah. And we have you're out there in country bumpkin, Illinois.
I had a guy from the South who now lives in the American South, the Southeast, tell me I'm a country bumpkin. And he's right.
Yeah. I am in a suburb of Charlotte. And I don't know what's going on here where I'm at. It's a town called Lake Wylie. And we got, I think, all the offshoot from whatever Charlotte has going on. And so we get some of the trickle down effect of what technology they have. So we actually have pretty decent internet here. Like I've been, like, on Mondays and Fridays, typically I work remotely and it's all on video. And I haven't had a single issue. It's been weird. But when I was in Hawaii, I would have issues all the time. I was cutting off left and right during the podcast. I was having a lot of issues.
Well, you were also on that, like, government military grade Wi-Fi. So,
right.
You know, now I'm on the hillbilly Wi-Fi. I mean, like, when my old house in South Elgin when I was doing the podcast with old buddy regular Scott, you know, I never had issues, right? Everything yeah. worked just fine. Then I moved to Ogle County, Illinois, and it's like sketchy.
Well, I also think that StreamYard just takes up so much of like data from your computer. Like
that's a problem.
Yeah. Because even like when we first started StreamYard, it said it'll say specifically like you should be hardwired into your computer when you're doing this. And I've just never had that capability. In fact, when they did they wired my house for internet, I had them put in an Ethernet port over here behind me. And I bought a cord and I got like, I guess they call it a dongle for the Mac. And I got a thing to plug in Ethernet to the Mac. And for whatever reason, there's just no internet coming out of that port. And I just never had the guy come back out and do it because I have had no issues ever since we've started. So we're doing good so far.
So last week I did that. I got my dongle right here, right? And I have my Ethernet. I wired right in to the Orbi, and that just it wasn't working last week. So this week I'm on a Wi-Fi hotspot. I tried to wire in directly and for some reason it just wasn't working. So, but with the Wi-Fi hotspot seems to be working okay. So, we'll play it by ear and see how it goes. How's the week, man?
Week's been really good. So Wednesday was my son's birthday and then we had his birthday party today. So I've been, I'm all filled up. We did pulled pork sliders, you know, at the house. And then I got some cupcakes in my belly. My belly a little big these days, getting a little big. I'm a retiree. Part of me wants to go back in the military because they're really focusing on physical fitness now that I'm gone. But I was part of the OG Air Force standards, which is for pussies. And so I never really got myself in shape every year, but now they're stepping it up a notch. I'm like, okay, this is cool. I'm just too goddamn old to go back. So
what's your vibe on all the new standards and stuff like that, that they're trying to push from our,
you know, like as far as like physical fitness and stuff, I'm there with them. I'm grooming standards. I'm there with them. Uniform standards. I think it's important. We got away from it for a long time. And that's important. There's other issues that I don't exactly agree with. I think there's a way to kind of nail down, but a lot of folks were coming into the military and wanted the military to conform to them. But the only way the military works is if you go into the military and you conform to the military, right? Like that's how it works. That's why it works. And we were getting away from that for a long time. And I think, you know, we were going hard left for a while. Now we've gone hard right. You know, somewhere in the middle is probably where we need to be at to make sure that we got all the best people. The guy, the Secretary of War, I think is a bit of a clown. not to get too political, but I see him as a bit of a clown. But I don't disagree with some of the moves he's made. I felt like, you know, we should have been adhering to standards for a long time and more. Like, dude, I tried to kick somebody out for not meeting physical standards. This and a sweet person failed her fitness test 4 times in a row. I tried to kick them out. And then the wing commander, the guy who's in charge of the entire base, was like, well, you know, I don't really think we should. I'm like, it's written here in the regulation that you're supposed to do this. He's like, yeah, I know, but I'm still in charge, so we're not going to do that. And I'm just like, oh my God. It's like, what are we doing? Like, the person can't run a mile and a half. Like, you can't run a mile and a half. You don't belong in uniform. I don't get it.
Yeah, I swing pretty far to the left on a lot of things. But when I heard him, and I was ready to dog it, and I heard him talk about it, and I actually have to admit that I went, yeah, my college wrestling team shouldn't have tighter standards than the U.S. military. You know, I truly believe that, you know.
Yeah.
Bro, I can't. Yeah. And a lot of other stuff he says that it's completely stupid, but like
right.
when it comes
he's,
to
he's
that,
a bit of
I'm
a
like,
clown.
He's a bit yeah. of a clown, bit of a clown. Yeah. But I agree. So, like, if you're in the military,
what I always told people that didn't want to adhere to the physical standard, like you still want to support your country. There's ways to do it. You can come in as a contractor. That we have civilian positions. We have all kinds of positions, but to wear the uniform, you got to be fit. That's it. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And if you can't do that, and in the Air Force, our standards weren't very high. they weren't like, And for people not to be able to meet those standards, I was like, okay, you know, not every job is for everybody. You're just not cut out to be here. It's like, you're not a bad person. You just don't meet the requirements to stay. And I'm sorry, but we gotta let you go. You know,
that's not a bad thing. Like, I think that when it comes to U.S. military, there should be standards. Like, again, this is where I tend to break with a lot of my fellow lefties on this. Like, again, maybe that's just because I'm an athlete. Like, if you put on a singlet and you look sloppy, like, I don't want to see you in a singlet. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just my world in wrestling. Like, it's a body business, man. Like, it's pro
right,
wrestling.
Right. Like,
you want to look good.
Yeah. I mean, if you're out there and you're being body shamed, you can control that situation. It doesn't mean you have to be an underwear model, but you should at least be physically fit if your job requires it, I think. Right. And some people are going to call you sloppy, and you probably got that coming if that's your job. And if you're too sensitive to take that kind of criticism, maybe you need to get a different job. And like I said, not every job is for everybody. You know what I mean? Not everybody's cut out for pro wrestling. Not everybody's cut out for amateur wrestling. Oh, dude, did you get a chance to listen to Mark Kerr on Rogan this week? I sent you the clip.
You did send me the clip. I did get to check it out a little bit. Mark Kerr is, I don't know, I got a soft spot for the guy. I kind of always, I don't know, he's rough around the edges, and I've always got a thing for the Smashing Machine. As like, God, I love that documentary so much from the early from the 2000s. And I like the guy, you know? Let's talk about that.
So the new movie is out. They only made, like, I guess less than $7 million, but it's an A24 film. I didn't think it was going to make.
It's an art house film. This is similar to The Iron Claw, right? You got to look at it like that. Right. You can't look at this in the standards of
same studio, right?
Same studio, yeah. A24 films are designed to win Oscars, right? That's what they are. They're kind of like the Weinstein Company used to be before that whole, you know, went like that.
Let's not mention them. Ugh.
I mean, that's what they did. They tried to collect Oscars, and A24 has kind of like picked up on that, and they try to be the modern day art house film, and they've done it a different way. Like I said, I really liked Iron Claw. I don't know about that movie. I really loved it. So Smashing Machine I thought it was weird when they casted Dwayne to play him because he's so much older. But man, it's getting really good reviews, and he looks good in the role. Yeah. And Mark Kerr is a cool story.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it. And when I do, I'm hoping that you would watch it around the same time. That way we could talk about it on the podcast. I think that's good. You know, not only is it a rock movie, but Mark Kerr, obviously a collegiate wrestler, and then he was in the UFC, went to Pride for a while. He's in the UFC Hall of Fame now. And he's an interesting guy. I thought his Rogan interview was really good. I did not know that he was that funny. And then him talking about Kurt Angle, and I just thought it was fascinating that he was like, you know, I would beat Kurt Angle's ass. I beat him 4 times in a row just on like pure strength and technique. But then he just hit another gear, and like a demon just came at me. And the next thing you know, I'm on my ass, and he's beating me left and right. But I guess they had a pretty good rivalry in the 90s in college, right?
They did. Like Kurt and Angle was the thing. And like Kurt talks very highly of Mark Kerr. Like Kurt Angle is like 20 some odd years ago, they put together the NCAA's, you know, all 75th anniversary team. And Kurt Angle was one of two men that represented heavyweight, right? Kurt Angle was fantastic. He was a multiple time NCAA champion. You know, Kerr was not. So, I mean, Mark Coleman was also up there too, was a rival of those guys. But I mean, Kurt wrestled heavyweight and Kurt wrestled 190. So in college, when they wrestled internationally, they came down and wrestled. I forget what the weight class was exactly at the time. They've switched modern all the time. It's 220-ish. Like it's somewhere, I think it's 220 was weight. So 100 kilos was that weight. So Kurt was coming up, Angle was coming down. And it's different. So Angle had to kind of adjust to the speed a little bit. But I mean, Kurt Angle was, before he went to the Olympics, Kurt Angle was a world champion, like in 95. Kurt Angle was really fucking good. Like, I don't know if people really realize like how good of an amateur wrestler Kurt Angle is. Like, I know everyone loves Brock Lesnar. Kurt Angle would have beat Brock Lesnar's ass if they were contemporaries.
Yeah.
He was so much better. Kurt Angle had amazing leg attacks, especially at his size. Like Kurt Angle was fantastic, and like he won the Olympics kind of controversially, but he got there. He made the team. He was legitimately injured. He's like, they did have an interesting rivalry. I think Kerr has a little bit of rose colored glasses with that, but Kurt Angle did in fact have a another gear. Like yeah. Kurt Angle did turn. That is all a true story. That dude was fantastic.
Well, Kurt would he's pretty open about his struggles, and he was like, he didn't have that next gear, and then just cardiovascularly, a guy like Kurt Angle could just work circles around him, and that's kind of what ended up doing them in, that, at least from his perspective. And that movie, The Smashing Machine, I guess is Garrett was saying it's beat for beat the documentary, which now I'm even more interested in, because like some people say that some of the stuff that Mark Kerr was saying in the documentary wasn't true, but it's still from Mark's perspective. And so I'm really curious as to how it ends up being.
As a guy with a degree in documentary filmmaking, that is literally what I studied in college, like a documentary film is not a news report. It is not like beholden to truth. It is a perspective, right? And people have perspective. When you have a documentary film, you're portraying a perspective. You're trying to sell an idea, just like any movie, right? It's just, you know, reality.
Yeah.
But reality is, truth and reality aren't always the same thing. So, I mean, I think people kind of get like, Mark Kerr has his version of how things worked, and he can legitimately believe that that's the truth. It's like you show two people, you know, a color, and they're going to say, one person, like, oh, that's mauve. Oh, that's chartreuse. That's pink. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all perspective and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be, I'm interested to see, because like, there's no greater villain in documentary history than Mark Kerr's girlfriend. Like, she comes off so vile and evil in that documentary. I cannot wait to see how that comes across in film.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of problematic wrestlers who had been fired several times and but are still beloved to this day, our top story. I bounced back and forth between what I wanted the top story to be, but we didn't really have any top story that was like a home run main event top story that I didn't already cover on Brace for Impact. So I wanted to start the show off with AEW signing Andrade. Chat, I'll get to you guys in a minute, but we're going to start off with Andrade. So AEW re-signed Andrade. He returned this past Wednesday. He attacked Kenny Omega. So AEW is going away from Fletcher and Omega for various reasons. They did build that, but it looks like they're not going to go to it for now. And Andrade has joined the Dungeon of Doom, I think. What?
NWO Maple Leaf.
Yeah, the Maple Leaf NWO faction in All Elite Wrestling, the Callis family. He has joined the Callis family, so he'll be with Callis. And it looks like he's going to take on Omega at Wrestle Dream. And shortly after, so the story had been out for a couple weeks that Andrade had a couple wellness failures, but nobody really detailed what those were. But
get out of here!
I know.
Andrade? Shot.
Well, so the thing is that what the word coming out of Mexico and a lot of the reporters from Mexico are openly talking about it. I don't want to say any names of recreational drugs because people can be litigious. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything. But the rumor is that he wasn't fired for steroid tests and that it was more recreational style drugs party favors, things like that. And he is going back to AEW. And so the party favor type stuff didn't really leak until afterwards. WWE obviously planted some of that stuff, but I don't think WWE is also like emailing Rob Viper and Lucha Blog and these guys and saying, Hey, it was this. I think they're just kind of plugged into the scene and kind of. So now AEW is taking back this guy who's clearly got some problems from his first stint in AEW, two stints in WWE. But now he's back and he's back in a top spot, man. What do you think about Andrade returning?
One, I get it. I get why they would give Andrade another crack. He's very talented. When I think Daryl Strawberry was going to get chance after chance until he proved that he couldn't do it anymore. I don't know if I consider us really like a part of the wrestling media, but being small parts of the wrestling media that we are, we hear stories from time to time. And I'm going to turn, this is what I do. I like turning the clock back. I'm going to turn the clock back to November of 1989 when Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard,
I giggled as soon as you said it.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm about to say. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard discovered the grass was not greener on the other side. They left Crockett just as they were about to get sold to Turner, and they had gotten tired of Dusty, and they had a good year in WWE, but both aren't until they discovered, hey, man, these payoffs aren't better, and we're traveling a lot more, and we're a lot more miserable. So maybe we just go back to Crockett or go back to the new WCW. So they put in their notice, right? And so they got released. And then it immediately got leaked that Tully Blanchard had, in fact, failed a drug test for cocaine use. And immediately Jim Herd was like, absolutely not. We cannot bring Tully Blanchard back here. Mike, do you believe that Tully Blanchard was the only person on the 1989 WWF roster who was, in fact, partaking in cocaine?
I think you can count more people that weren't on cocaine than there were. You know what I mean? Like, I get the feeling that 90% of that roster was. I mean, it was the popular drug among famous people in the 1980s, right? Yes, and in Wall Street and the NFL it was really big in the NFL too. Like, it was just the thing. And the thing about cocaine is, it gets out of your system rather quickly. And so if you know when you're being tested, you could probably, you know, get away. Kids, don't listen to Uncle Mike, by the way. I'm not suggesting you should go do this. I'm just like, that is true, though. It's like, if you're not being tested very often, you can go a long time without popping for that stuff if you know when you're being tested.
So for the record, I want to make sure everyone realizes who you're talking to, who's talking right now. You've got a guy in recovery and you've got a tea toddler. So you've got two dudes that are like on the straight and narrow, right? But let's be realistic here. I'm not saying I know for a fact, but we have all heard stories about current members of that roster who have had issues with similar substances who are still there, right? It seems like, I said, this very much, and now, do I doubt that this is an issue? Yeah. No. Do I think there's smoke to this fire? Quite possibly. Do I think he'd be the only person there? No, probably not. I can't tell you everything that I know because I don't know anything. But when people leave, these things do kind of come true. Now, Andrade has done a lot. So guys like Rob Viper and Lucha Rug are going to have like a decade plus worth of Andrade, not horror stories, but just like, the dude's, just look at him, man. The dude, trouble follows the dude wherever he goes. Now, he's an excellent professional wrestler. Is he going to get a chance? Yeah. Is he going to blow this chance? Probably.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. Like, then he'll go back to WWE and like have another run there. Like, he's kind of, who do we compare it to? We were sharing who we,
I compared him to Jeff Jarrett, who went back and forth, but Jeff Jarrett went back and forth, not due to, like being in trouble. Like, he just would sign shorter term contracts. And like, he came from that old, his dad's a promoter, you know what I mean? And he just tried to bounce back and forth to get the most money he could out of each. And that probably worked out for him. Although WWF never did take him back while he was still an active wrestler. Once WCW went underground, but that was the comp for me. I think you had a different comp.
I had Barry Windham. Yeah. Barry Windham is a guy who in the 80s people pegged as being the next and a future NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Barry Windham from about 1981 to about 1990, right? Maybe 89, is one of the best professional wrestlers in the world. He's so insanely talented. He's big. He was good looking. Like, Barry didn't really love pro wrestling all that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he would bounce around. So Dusty had big plans for him in Georgia, right? And then Barry left. Or no, Sioux, Florida. And then Barry left to go to WWF with Mike Rotunda, US Express. They were the first big tag team in the Vince era, right? Yep. That was it. They came out to Bruce Springsteen. They were getting pushed. Those guys, Windham and Rotunda, got pushed. And then
Hulk Hogan's Rick Derringer song was originally made for them.
And if you listen to the Pile Driver album, Jesse Ventura literally on the track says, "I can't believe that's for Windham and Rotunda." Like, great. You have to actually listen to the album version of that. Great little cut. Jesse was the man. Now, you know, you've sold me, by the way, in the Hall of Fame. Jesse belongs.
I'm voting for Jesse.
We will talk about that. Jesse definitely belongs. So anyways, Barry, then he leaves W. Then he's like, I don't want to do the travel anymore because the travel was brutal. And guys got to that travel back then, Mike? They had to get some, a little bit of help to get from town to town.
You needed something to get you up and you needed something to take you back down, for sure.
That's the reality of stuff. And then he went back to Crockett and had a big run there. And then he left Crockett and went to WWE as the Widowmaker. And he was going to be a run with Hogan. It was going to be great. And then Barry left and went back to WCW.
Yeah.
Like, this is Barry never quite hits. And then remember he has this in 94, he has the secret identity match with, or the mystery opponent match with Flair. And he comes back. Spring Stampede. Spring Stampede in Chicago, actually. Fat as hell. He was
like 303 bills. Yeah.
Fat. Like, and at that point Barry had lost it, but it was the same deal. He went back to WWF as the Stalker and the new Blackjacks, and then he's back in WCW doing the I Hate Rap thing. Like, he bounced back and forth, and even half-assing it, Barry Windham was pretty fucking great.
Yeah,
so that's my kind of friend, Andrade.
Yeah, you could tell Barry never really loved pro wrestling. And wasn't there a thing, like a rumor, that he might have married someone that had like significant wealth and he didn't really need to do the pro wrestling stuff?
I think I heard, we'll put it this way. Blackjack and Kendall got themselves in trouble in the late 80s running a counterfeit scam in Georgia.
Yeah.
Barry didn't get himself in trouble because Barry didn't need to be counterfeiting money.
Yeah. Yeah. Barry didn't get caught up in all that stuff. Yeah. He is one of the bigger what ifs. Like, what if Barry loved pro wrestling, went to the gym and kept himself straight? Because he was big enough. Had he been physically fit, he could have had a big run against Hogan for sure.
For sure, as the Widowmaker, when he came in as Widowmaker, like at that point, like I said, Barry Windham is amazing. If you watch Barry Windham's U.S. title run in 1987 when he's a heel, he's fantastic, and he's got a soft body, but not like horrible from the standards of the era, like. Yeah. Barry's absolutely passable as a main eventer in WWF, but it's Barry Windham. Like, he just kind of, I'm done here. I'll leave. Like, right.
So WWE puts out there the wellness violations. Then the Mexico, I don't want to say Mexico because those guys don't live in Mexico. I think one's a Canadian, one's in Chicago. Yeah. But they're Lucha Libre media in America, right? Yeah. And they're kind of openly speculating about it. I think people kind of all figured it out. There's been no denials from anybody. It seems that that's what it is. You know, a Lucha Blog made a really good point that during the next press conference that they have for Wrestle Dream, the media should really press Tony Khan about, you know, is it a good idea to hire this guy who once attacked Sammy Guevara? And tried to get out of his contract, ended up doing business the right way at the end. Although there is some speculation that Andrade made Tony Khan believe that he was resigning, got pushed in the C2, and then ultimately decided not to resign. So there is that. That's what Dave Meltzer is saying. Andrade today, he didn't outright deny what Dave Meltzer said, but he did say that Dave Meltzer was not a good journalist. He said, and then he called him some names and stuff like that on Twitter today. It was pretty funny.
As one, I mean, and quite frankly, that is the relationship Dave should have with professional wrestlers publicly.
Yeah.
They should hate Dave. And I think Dave would agree with me on that, right? They should push back. Like, we need more of this. God damn it. We need more like real media. Like, that's exactly what it should be. It's like
Dave's not Andrade's friend. Dave is just going to report what Dave's version of the truth is. He's going to work his sources and get some of the news and information and put it out, and the consequences be damned, right? Like, that's what journalism is.
Here's the thing, and I think we've forgotten this, is if you're in the media, you're not supposed to be friends or fans of the people you're covering. You're supposed to come at this stuff with a straight arrow, right? You're supposed to tell it like it is and not like love what you like. You can love the business and stuff like that, but you have to be realistic with it. We have far too many fan journalists, and we have we know fan journalists, and they put their love of company or love of performer above reality a lot of the time. And I think that's dangerous. And I think that I know people, it's the cool thing to do now to shit on Dave Meltzer, but I think that Dave has his own issues like any human being in the world. Yeah. But the one thing Dave does, he doesn't kiss the ass.
No.
Like, unless you're Eddie Gilbert, but no, Dave, I think that's good. I think that whole thing was good.
Yeah, Dave takes L's here and there, especially lately, because I think there's some counterintelligence going on within wrestling, trying to put out all kinds of weird and fake stories and stuff to get these journalists to bite on them, and sometimes it happens. I think
stuff they do though.
Yeah, it's a total counter intel operation. You can see that my military is coming through, but I see it. I see it happening. And I'm leery of it happening to me. You know who I'm talking to, but I had somebody that was rather famous reach out to me recently, and I told you who it was. If you don't remember, I'll tell you offline. But and try to, you know, give me some information, and we talked about it, but give me some information. I couldn't run with it because I couldn't vet the information. But I was leery. It's like, why is this person telling me this? Like, we don't know each other. Like, I don't understand why this person would say this. And then, so I looked into it and it was like, okay, there might be some heat there between that person and the company that they're telling me about. So,
who's this geek? David is a fan journalist for AEW. Read a fucking book.
Well, here's the thing. Here's why Dave gets that label, because AEW, when they were created, a lot like they were doing the style that Dave really liked. It was like built upon that style, right? Like it was a New Japan, Ring of Honor, like a few, and then of course Mid-South. It was a fusion of a lot of the styles that Dave Meltzer likes, because Tony Khan grew up reading The Observer, right? And was just a fan of that stuff. So the entire community of the Wrestling Observer community, which was a big community at one point in time. I don't know how big it is anymore. Like the message board and all that stuff. But a lot of those folks like a similar style, and that's what AEW turned into. So naturally, like, they're having matches designed to get Dave's star ratings. WWE doesn't do that. So now people think that Dave's biased towards AEW, when AEW is really doing a style that he really prefers. And it's just one man's opinion. It's his opinion of the match. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's the thing, though, is Dave has been that guy since forever. Like, this is why Between the Sheets is one of the most important. If you're going to listen to a podcast about wrestling, specifically wrestling history, Between the Sheets is one of the most important podcasts, because they'll give you not just slivers of history of wrestling, but from the newsletter perspective. So you can see what fans of that era, the Smart Mark fans, were interested in. They've always been, quote unquote, hot moves guys. Right. By the way, I'll be guesting on next week's episode of Between the Sheets, talking about this week, 1989. One of my personal. I can't wait to have this conversation.
Oh, no wonder you had that Tully story, like, really quick. Like,
well, no, I just had that on. I just, that's why I'm doing this, because that's where my brain works.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's the thing, though, is like Tony Khan and these guys literally made their idea was to create a wrestling program specifically directed at Smart Mark fans, of which we are also those fans.
Yes.
Like, so, like, that is the appeal. Like,
he is the guy. Like, I think all of us at one point in our lives, maybe when we were teenagers and probably even a little bit older, we're like, if I had $1 billion and I would do a wrestling company, here's how I would do it. Well, Tony Khan was that guy and was able to do it. Like, he just had the resources to be able to do it. And he built a company around Smart Mark fans, like, and I think that's great. And he got away from that for a little bit, but it looks like he's back, right? It might even be to the detriment of his, you know, company at sometimes, but
I don't know, maybe. But I think that at the same, we have spoken ad nauseum that when AEW isn't trying to be the Smart Mark promotion, they hurt themselves. And I hear people say, well, they have to be more like WWE to grow. When I have 30 years of evidence that any company that tries to be more like WWE actually hinders their growth, because WWE is good at being WWE. And when other companies try to be WWE, it doesn't help them. The only way it helps you to grow your company to be like them is if you're actually in bed with them, like TNA is doing right now.
Yeah.
TNA is in bed with WWE. They're being more like WWE and they're succeeding. But when TNA was trying to be like WWE in 2008,
right,
it wasn't helping them.
Right. Well, right? Because they didn't have WWE support at the time.
Correct. So
they were the enemies. Yeah.
You're not gonna get WWE fans specifically to watch you as a WWE like product unless you have those guys doing that thing. If you're gonna be the challenger brand, you have to be different. And people, and I'm gonna save this argument too for those guys, because I've heard them say it. I'm gonna save this argument. Like, maybe, and you don't have, like, you say, we have to grow, you have to grow, you have to grow. Like, I will show you plenty of evidence that they were not growing their business, and they actually hindered themselves when they were trying to do the 31 flavors of ice cream type of deal.
Yeah.
Like, be different, be something unique, because the market is happy with WWE right now. This isn't like 2017 or 2018 when the market wasn't thrilled with what WWE was doing. Now WWE fans are happy. So why are you going to, how are you going to pull fans away from WWE to try something different by being the same as them? No, you got to do something. You got to be Darby Allin and jump through glass or something. You got to be, yeah. you got to be something unique, unless you're going to be TNA and just,
you got to do the things that WWE is not willing to do. Right. And WWE is just all about sponsors and all that, the corporate bigwigs. You got to be somewhat counterculture while still being a corporate entity, because they're on WBD, like they're on TBS and TNT. Those are not small networks, and they're on Max. That is a huge platform. Right. So they can't be completely counterculture, but you still got to create that illusion that you are counterculture, or at least counter to what the WWE is doing. And I think that that's when they're at their best, for sure.
Well, that was what Paul Heyman was so great at doing. Was he pointed this illusion that they were called counterculture while taking a check from Vince McMahon. Yeah. So, I mean, like that's pro wrestling, is, you know, you create facades and stuff like that. But I'm a firm believer that just doing what the Joneses are doing doesn't necessarily grow your business. Pepsi and Coke don't do the same things, right? Yeah. They run their businesses differently. And the more AEW, and again, they're trying to get back to this, and now they have to kind of catch back up. And they're never going to be as big as WWE, but they don't have to be, nor should they be.
Yeah. All right, let me get to the chat here. We got a lot of chats. I haven't gotten to you guys yet. At any time, you guys could drop a super chat, and I'll stop dead in my tracks. But Official Lil Silver says, news broke, Paige is headed back to WWE. No, she's not, Silver. Also, Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan. No, they're not.
Is he just making shit up? I respect it.
I think they're trying to trip us up, which I respect. But
I respect that immensely.
We're a little bit more plugged in than that, my brother. King of the North, the king of all Canadians, says, at my friend's place celebrating, the Blue Jays putting Super Bell to ass. Hope the show is great. So Vladimir Guerrero knocked off fucking Grand Salami tonight, and I don't remember what the final score was, but the Blue Jays did kick the Yankees' asses, and it was a beautiful sight.
Can I tell you, it was a beautiful sight? I don't know what happened today, but I watched the Brewers wreck the Cubs, man. And I smiled. I don't pay much attention to baseball because the White Sox are brutal, but God, do I hate the Chicago Cubs.
So Joe Lanza and I did a podcast on Tuesday.
I heard it was really good.
Yeah, thank you. Tuesday afternoon. And I learned at the beginning of the podcast that not only is he, I thought he was from Jersey, but he's a Cincinnati Reds fan.
He's a Reds fan.
Yeah, he's a Reds fan. And the Reds are playing the Dodgers that night in game one of the wild card series. And I'm a Dodgers fan. And he's a Los Angeles Rams fan. And the 49ers are playing the Rams on Thursday night that week. And it was a clean sweep, all three games. Like, Dodgers beat the Reds 2 out of 3, two in a row, boom, knocked them down. And then the 49ers, in one of the best games of the year, defeated, and it was like, it went to almost goddamn midnight, by the way, because it went to overtime, defeated the 49ers. So I haven't gotten a DM from Joe in a while. I get the feeling he's never let me back on his podcast. So I think that was it for me.
Oh, shit. That's funny.
Everything Pro Wrestling is here. Yo.
Yo.
All right, Lil Silver again. He says, okay, so he's actually saying something true here. He said, Joe Hendry will be special guest ref in the Men's Survivor Series match this Tuesday, and Jordan Grace is the special guest referee for the women's match. That is true. So, because both of them are based, like, Joe Hendry is working both shows, but he's NXT now, and so now they're creating, like, you know, like, drama there.
So very very ECW, WCW 2000 with the invasion stuff, 2001, excuse me.
Yeah. So the women's team is captained by Kalani Jordan, who is an NXT wrestler that just happens to be the TNA Knockouts champion right now. But she is, the whole thing is asinine. They blew the whole goddamn story.
So it's the invasion all over again.
Yeah.
It's fitting perfectly.
Yeah. But they don't call it invasion anymore. It's a showdown. Cause actually, you know what? I haven't talked about this publicly. That might be my fault, JD.
Really? Go on.
Yeah. So when they made the announcement, not yesterday, but the Saturday before at No Mercy, that they were doing the show on October 7th, I think it was like that night or the next morning, I said, me, like, idiot, I said, oh, wow, doing a show called Invasion on October 7th is fucking wild. And it got picked up and it got retweeted. And BJ Bethel like quote tweeted it and like he's talking about it. And then he gave me credit for it being aggregated. Israeli media is picking this shit up. It's in the Middle East. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I was like, guys, I was like, I know for a fact they didn't mean to do that. Like, they were not trying to rub it in Israel's face, you know, after that atrocity that happened on October 7th in 2023. Like, they were not trying to make light of that situation. They're just being counter-programmed by AEW. So they made a big show, and they've had the storyline going on with TNA, so they decided to do it that day.
And here's another thing. They had the trademark.
Yeah.
They've had the trademark since 2001.
Right.
Did you notice all the NXT shows are all named after old WWF, WCW, ECW pay-per-views? Yeah. Like, but the fact that sometimes I go, we're not really wrestling media. And then other times I'm like, holy shit, we do start shit sometimes. Like,
yeah. I can't legitimately take credit, but I think probably played a small part of it.
No, I think you have changed. I absolutely think you should take credit because I truly don't believe anyone at WWE really has any clue. This goes back. This is company culture.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody knows what goes on in the real world. No. In that company.
No, they didn't put it together. And, you know, and I said it and some people like went and looked at it. Was like, oh, that's right. Like, you know what I mean? Cause like if it happened in America, like we would know, but it happened in another country. So
right.
We're all full of our own shit. I just happen to be super into geopolitics, you know, and stuff that's going on around the world. So I
had to look up what the fuck you were talking about. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, that did. Like, was literally, I didn't want to sound like an idiot or I would have said something. Like, I was like, what the hell is Mike talking? Oh, that's right. That did happen. Yeah. Like, so
yeah, I happen to be one of those few wrestling fans that like, I consume a lot of news media, like news podcasts.
Educated?
Yeah. I wouldn't say educated. I'm pretty sure I cheated my way through a master's degree, but.
No. One, you have a master's degree. And if you're not cheating your way through a master's degree, you're not trying. Two, you are well educated, Mike. Like, don't let yourself bury your lead on that. So,
yeah. Tyler Helton says, breaking news, Killer Cross going to MLW. Yeah, that did.
Is that breaking news? I thought that was announced a long time ago.
No, it was rumored, but. They announced it last night on their show. Yeah.
I think I'm going to start
That's watching. A good spot for them.
I think it's a perfect spot for them. Yeah. I think I'm going to start watching MLW again. Like, I keep seeing what they're doing. I'm listening to Joe and Rich talk about it. I got such a soft spot for MLW.
Yeah, me too. They had a fun show at one point in time. They lost their way for a while. Well, I mean, look, let's be honest. You know, AEW gets created and MLW loses a lot of their talent. They lose MJF. They lose a lot of people, and then it's just really hard to keep replenishing that talent when you're not paying people.
Mike, I'll be honest with you. I think they lost a lot of their identity when AEW came around because MLW comes back in 2017, and they have all these heavy hitters, right? All these heavy hitter independent talents. They're getting a lot of guys coming from Japan doing stuff with them. They're getting a lot of the big name indie guys that are like Swerve and Matt Riddle. This is 2017-ish. Like, yeah. All of a sudden, MLW for a bit was the cool indie to watch outside of Ring of Honor. So then AEW showed up and they really kind of took away some of that steam. So I think Court, and I'm, dude, no one's been harder on Court than me, but I mean, like, I think they kind of lost their identity a little bit, and now I think they've kind of found their way. Dude, any company that's got Cesar Duran, aka Dario Cueto, out there making blood money jokes about WWE during the show, I'm okay. Court, it's all forgiven, man.
Yeah.
That alone makes me love your company again.
Right, and their show is free on YouTube. They can't be making any money. They're stretching out that lawsuit money, like, quite a bit. But they got they put Donovan Dijak and Baron Corbin as a tag team called the Skyscrapers. I kind of want to check that out. I just want to see it. I think I need to see what that looks like. God, what is the name of their new champion? I can't remember. Matt Riddle Matt Riddle lost the world title to Mads Kruger, so that's the new champion there.
God,
and then their national openweight champion is a CMLL wrestler. Oh, it's Blue Panther.
Oh yeah, the Blue Panther rules.
Because I called him the national old and overweight champion.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's right. It's Mads Kruger, but Kruger goes by Cruel on the Indies, so they call him Mads Cruel Kruger. And it's like, for the alliteration purposes, those two K's in a row really make a sound that's hard. They should be calling him Cruel Mads Kruger.
Right. Or
that's a free one, Court. There you go.
Or just Mads Kruger or Cruel. Like, why do we have to have all three names?
Because Court's got that WWE background where he tries to rebrand stuff on his own. So, but Mads Cruel Kruger is there's too much of that. It should just be
So their show's free on YouTube. I need to pick it back up because I did like this show for a long time. I
just covering MLW again.
Yeah, we should start checking them out every now. I don't want to steal Lance's gimmick, you know, but. Yeah, but our whole show is basically stealing their gimmick, except for we just don't watch nowhere near as much wrestling as they do.
To be fair, no one can. Those guys are machines.
Which they're monsters. Here, let's see. Breaking news, Andrade, new Crash Heavyweight Champion, too. Yeah, I did hear about that.
Is the Crash still around? Who books the Crash now? I thought
Cody. I don't know. I don't know. It was Conan for a while.
Yeah.
And he got fired. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't know the Crash was still a thing.
Yeah, I got to get through these chats. Mad Dog stuff. So TK is also part of the sports world. He's probably dealt with a dozen guys.
That's like a great point. Between soccer and football. Yeah, he's probably right.
Transferring heat. Paul Heyman had Mike Johnson and Tony Khan had Dave Meltzer. So Paul Heyman was also friends with Dave Meltzer. So let's see.
Okay, so like, Mike Johnson and Dave Shear created, was it the Lariat? I think that was theirs.
They were onewrestling.com and they were like the official, I think they ran the ECW website too.
They did. They started their little deal because they thought Dave was unfair to ECW. They thought Mike Johnson and Dave Shear thought Dave Meltzer was unfair to Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
Just that is a lot to take in. And then you just, when you make that assumption, the whole rest of the picture just kind of crumbles in.
Right.
Like Tony Khan wanted, like when they started, especially Tony Khan wanted Dave Meltzer's attention. What the fuck did the Young Bucks call their finishing move for a long time, Mike?
The Meltzer driver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did Dave tell them to do that? Or did they do that because they knew it would get them heat from specific fans?
It would get them heat. And also probably a little bit of pandering. You're working the refs a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, like, newsflash, Dave Meltzer is a human being. and like, he might like stuff better when you're nicer to him, right? So, like, you know what I mean? Like, that is a natural thing. I don't think that he's, like, he's not out there lying, though.
No, so I don't think
he's nicer to people who are nicer to him, for sure.
For sure. Like, when you look at the Between the Sheets, the beautiful part of this, you watch the evolution of the history between Dave Meltzer and Eddie Gilbert is like the lifeblood of the Sheets in the 80s and early 90s. And Eddie was super cool to the Sheets. So everybody loved Eddie. They're actually convinced that what was Eddie's promotion? The CWF was like good. It was awful. And it was booked not great, but they would, you know, Steve Beverly and Dave Meltzer would tell you, man, that Alabama territory under Paul Heyman or under Eddie Gilbert's great. It's not, it was actually terrible.
You know who has a little bit of Eddie Gilbert in him and is Killer Cross.
And that you are spot on 100%
right. Because the whole We Want Cross was a media thing that came about. Like, and I don't think it was a coordinated effort where Killer Cross was like texting all like Sean Ross Sapp and all these other media guys saying, hey, can you help me get over to get WWE's attention? I think it was a more natural thing, and it's a more natural thing because he's so friendly to them, and legitimately nobody can say a bad word about Killer Cross because he's just like a good dude, right? Everybody seems to like that guy, and he treats media members with a lot of respect and talks to them and is really friendly with them. And when he's a free agent, he does their podcasts, he does their shows. He's really good at working the refs. He's good at working them, not in a bad way, but he gets people on his side despite the fact that he's not very good.
Right.
And so he got a lot of support for a guy who's not that good. And, you know, kudos to him.
To the point where it's backfired a little bit in his career.
Yeah.
Like the whole We Want Cross thing did happen, but people were convinced that it was some Pillman-esque level of work, right? That they're going to bring him back and give him this big main event push. You know what I'm saying? Like he kind of worked himself in a bit of a shoe with that.
Yeah.
Right. We're like, and of course, like most of those We Want Cross people are like, oh, he's not in WWE anymore.
Yeah, they've moved on. Do you think that they're going to go support Killer Cross in MLW? Like, are they going to be there for his big debut?
No.
No, yeah.
Because, like, WWE fans like WWE. This is what I'm saying before. WWE fans like WWE. Mercedes, as Sasha Banks, was huge. Yeah. How many people came to AEW when she came in? Handful?
No. No. You know? Yeah, not many. Billy from Philly. Hey, sorry about your loss last night, bud. You have not answered my DM. I don't know why you wouldn't answer my DM after Teoscar hits that homer, the go-ahead homer while you're at the Phillies game. I don't know why you wouldn't answer my DM. That's rude. But so you can't be an alternative if you try to be like WWE, then you're just poor imitation. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
bingo.
Spot on, Billy. Maria says, counterculture is good for business. Why be against it? I think
that depends on how counter the culture is. You know?
I think if you can create the illusion that you're a punk rock band, but yet you still have funding behind you and you're still making money, like that's a sweet spot. Like if you can be Green Day, you know, before Wake Me Up Before September Ends, like before that track hits, I think Dookie and to American Idiot, you're in a good spot. Then after American Idiot, you're too poppy at that point.
I don't know. When Seinfeld wrapped up its show with Time of Your Life, I think that was when everybody should have gone, Green Day, maybe go too far.
Time of Your Life was like they tried to make that my senior song.
They did make that my senior song.
Okay. Yeah, they did get a little bit too poppy there, but I still think they had a little bit of some of their edge to them at that point. But then I think after American Idiot, they just kind of like, okay, you're no longer counterculture. You're like, you know, you're Hollywood now. Mm-hmm.
But then so many bands followed that path, and then you had the pop punk to the point where it became its own thing, right?
Yeah. All right. A couple more. Keep It Wolfson says, Kruger adds a third K and Triple H might hire him.
Thanks. I'm mad I didn't say that.
Yeah, you know, quit fucking, like, just DM me the joke next time and let me fucking have it, bro. What are you doing? Billy says Templario's our middleweight champ. Fun show if you like CML Lucha. Yeah.
Templario rules, man. Good call.
Yeah.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
All right, man, we got a lot of chats tonight. I'm going to one more chat and then we're going to go to our final topic for the night. Maria says, I think Dakota Kai is going to answer Mercedes Open Challenge. She's from Florida. That makes sense. So sure. Do you know what she's talking about?
Yeah. Mercedes says something on the show about when they go to Florida, the open, someone's going to fill an open challenge. Do you know us whether it comes to this stuff? None of us pay attention to that. Like Dakota Kai. Sure.
Yeah.
Is she still good or did she get hurt a bunch? I don't even know. I haven't watched her.
No. So you're probably thinking of Nixon Newell who had a couple of blown out knees. Okay. Dakota Kai is still pretty good. I think that they just realized that she had reached a certain point and she was never going to get past that with them. And so they just, they cut her. And I think they probably didn't like her boyfriend. It was Carl Fredericks. So I think they're both gone. So I don't know. They both got fired at the same time. Makes me think they didn't like them. I don't know.
Dakota Kai's dating Carl Fredericks?
I believe so. Correct me if I'm wrong, chat. If I'm wrong, then I'll edit this out.
Did I tell you Carl Fredericks got mad at me in a tweet once a couple weeks ago? I made a joke about remember back when DJ Eddie was going to get a main event push in Japan and then left instead? That worked out great. I was being a dick, and he actually found it. I thought I was being enough of a dick where it wasn't obvious.
That's happened to me a few times where I don't even address the person. I'm like saying something mean to really like to pop like seven people, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, it was like you and me. So I was trying to pop you guys.
Yeah. And but you really like shit's public. And some of the wrestlers like follow me, and then sometimes it gets retweeted and somebody will send it to somebody. That's how I got in hot water with Jordynne Grace last year. And then a couple of days ago, I get in hot water with Sean Ross Sapp and John.
Oh, again?
Yeah. I didn't tag them. I didn't say anything about them. I was referencing a story that had nothing to do with them. They put themselves into it, right? So Russell Purist aggregated a Mike Johnson story about Andrade's wellness violations, said that there was two violations, and that's why he was like, oh, from the WWE, right? I quote tweeted that, and I said, hey, AEW needs to steal Chris LaGentle. He is invaluable. And that's all I said. It wasn't a Sap story. It wasn't an Alba story. It was a Mike Johnson story, according to the tweet that I was quote tweeting. Sap doesn't follow me. I don't follow Sap, right? We DM each other every now and then. And we kind of just talk about usually TNA type stuff, right? He doesn't really give me any information or anything. He's going to save that for himself, right? So he sees this and then he replies to it, tags John Alba and said, hey, this story came from me, and then John Alba had it as well, and neither one of us got that from Chris LaGentle. Chris LaGentle had nothing to do with this. John Alba then quote tweets it and says, I swear my entire career that Chris LaGentle did not give me that information. I'm like, guys, you weren't mentioned in the story. Like, I never said that he did. And John Alba, who's I assume is a smart guy, writes for Sports Illustrated, he made himself sound really guilty in that situation, because he was saying that he was being accused of something that he wasn't being accused of and denied that it ever happened, but no one said that it did, bro. Like, what are you doing?
There's a great Shakespeare quote of me, thinks thou doth protest too much.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's that for you normal people. That means if sometimes you make a big enough stink, you kind of shine a light on the fact that hey, maybe a little bit true. And here's the thing. A good journalist protects his source, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is Chris LaGentle is really sloppy about stuff. And the LaGentle, it's not just him, but you know, what Mike's saying is, well, one, Mike was making a fucking joke.
Yes.
So I think the people got to remember.
Yeah. You remember like in 08, like if anything went wrong in the country, like you would see, thanks Obama.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So that's what I was doing. Like, yeah, it was the blaming things on Chris LaGentle was a thing like 6 months ago.
Right. It was a joke.
Yeah. It was a joke. It had nothing to do with those guys. They happened to make it about themselves and say that they're, I don't know what they're thinking, but I didn't do that. And I told them, I was like, guys, I didn't even mention you.
Here's the thing is that like, they don't like Sean. I've only had a couple of talks with Sean. Like, he was really nice to me. My dad passed away about a year and a half ago. So I had no personal beef for Sean, but I have told him straight up that I think that what they do is PR. They run PR for the wrestling companies. And like, for a guy who like lives on burying people, he's had a real difficult time burying the two of us, because we know our shit. We're grown ass men.
Right.
People get too offensive with Mike Gilbert specifically. And I love Mike. He's one of my dearest friends, but he is an absolute shit stirrer. Like, constant. Dude. Like, I send you your own tweets sometimes laughing about what a troll you are. Like, yeah. Mike lives to fucking troll people. And if you like, that's like the work, right? Yeah. And like, to see these like professionals who take themselves so seriously get worked up by you just makes me roll my eyes every fucking time. I'm like, why do they keep falling for you just being a dick? Like,
yeah. And especially because I have gone away from even mentioning people when I'm being a dick. I don't reply to anybody. I'm on my own timeline, being a dick, being a meathead.
Yeah.
Trying to make brand. this piece of shit, Keeba Wolfson, laugh. Like, I'm just trying to make him laugh, trying to make you laugh, trying to make the like the BFI chat guys laugh.
Yeah.
It's not really serious. Oh, JD, I have a tweet ready to go. It's not written yet, but it's in my head.
Wait up.
It's gonna come out on Thursday. So
okay, so
Tuesday is NXT Showdown, and they're going head to head with AEW Title Tuesday. As far as I know, AEW Title Tuesday, their only match they have announced so far is Mercedes Moné versus Florida Woman. I think they might have. I think Moxley is actually. I think I saw that Josh Alexander's wrestling Ibushi, which I'm interested in.
That's personally. Cool, actually.
Yeah. That sounds like a good match. But the fact that NXT is on CW and they're going head to head, NXT is going to beat them probably pretty handily. And they're doing the whole showdown gimmick with TNA. They have a whole card promoted already. It's being promoted all over main roster stuff, ads everywhere. I get the feeling NXT is going to beat them pretty handily. So we're going to get those numbers on Thursday. And my tweet is going to be TNA with some help from NXT defeats AEW Dynamite head to head. Right. And you know that I'm just like, you understand what I'm doing.
I'm laughing. Everybody
in the chat knows what I'm doing. Right. But there's going to be about 200 people on Twitter that have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And they're like, oh, this piece of shit. So I'm gonna have to mute it right away. They're gonna call for my head. You know, they're probably gonna send the National Guard after me. Like, it's gonna be a whole thing because they hate mathematics, they hate shit posting, and I can't wait. I'm just so excited when it happens.
I'm impressed with how, for WWE, who constantly says AEW is not competition, to take it so seriously that they're loading up and making sure people watch NXT.
Yeah.
To win a pointless war when you're comparing network to cable, when it's funny, you asked me to do some research on the new Nielsen.
Yes. Stuff,
right. So I did some digging. TV business fascinates me. I haven't gotten to a big conversation about this in a while. So Nielsen's new, and I read up on Thurston. Brandon Thurston's even trying to make heads or tails of this and struggling. Nielsen's change the way they're gathering they're essentially harvesting information. Used to be under the old, and again, here too, Nielsen has not been the same for, you know, what we think of how Nielsen did stuff when we were kids, when Nitro and Raw had their little back and back, totally different than how they're harvesting now. Used to be you have your Nielsen family audiences, they're clocking what they're watching. Right. And that's where the sample size comes from. So it's never, they said 8 million people watched. Well, maybe 8 million people watched. Right. It's an estimate, but it's the estimate everybody winning. Like if someone puts out the moon is 26,000 miles away from Earth and everybody generally accepts that that's true, even though it might not be true, we all kind of operate on that. So that's kind of how Nielsen is. Everyone's playing by the same bat. So the new Nielsen data, right? It wasn't just these small samples. Now they're trying to get more big picture data that's taking information from their homes, from streaming services, from more big sources, big data. And they're still not terribly clear on what that means, right? And what I was reading Thurston, which has been interesting, is everyone thought it would make the rating points go higher, and it has for everything else on television.
Yeah.
With the exception of wrestling.
Yeah,
wrestling is gone, and it's across the board. It's not just AEW. It's so AEW, it's NXT, it's WWE. Like, everything is lower than it was with these new Nielsen numbers. And again, what does Nielsen mean? Here's why Nielsen is a joke for wrestling to begin with. Madison Avenue, the people who buy advertising, like the advertisers themselves. That's what advertisers want, to target their products to specific people. It's getting more difficult in this age of streaming. Like, you watch what's crushing in their ratings. It's old people. It's older Xers and baby boomers watching Fox News. That's who generally watches regular cable television. So those ratings are through the roof. But those people don't buy new shit. Right. They've been buying the same brand of socks since 1984, and they're going to keep doing it. So advertisers think, well, they're not worth advertising to because they're not going to influence them. I want to advertise to young viewers, but it's hard to find, or young consumers, but it's hard to target young consumers. It's why there's so much advertising on YouTube. It's why there's advertising on TikTok. It's why there's advertising on Instagram and all that shit. Right. So they're having a hard time reaching them. So the idea is that you want to target your avatar, your customer avatar. You want these people to see your product so they buy it. The problem is advertisers assume that all wrestling fans are poor and stupid. So they must advertise their product to poor, stupid people. That is literally, so WWE gets great ratings and always has, and shit advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so that's where kind of this is why ratings points really matter. And we can sit there and like dick swing, well, this is the number two show and this is the number four show. But in reality, that shit doesn't matter. Like, Eric Bischoff made that stuff matter.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking cared until Eric Bischoff started talking about, we're number one. Guess what? WCW almost always had better ratings than WWF. WWF didn't give a fuck about ratings.
Yeah.
Until
they had pay-per-views and ticket sales.
That's it. They dominated it. WCW had to cancel toys. And WCW had to cancel their house show business for years because they weren't selling. WWF didn't give a fuck what their ratings points were until they did. So all this talk about what's the number two promotion, what's the number four promotion, who gives a fuck? None of it matters.
Yeah,
none of it matters. You're getting paid. And here's the thing. Right. Well, this is the scary thing nobody wants to talk about. These networks are ran by complete and total fucking morons who spend obscene amounts of money on stuff they can never get back. They're never going to see ROI on anything because in reality, they're going to be gone in 3 years and somebody else is going to have to pick up the pieces. This is why these conversations are stupid because nobody knows what the media landscape is going to look like in a year, let alone 3 years, let alone 5 years. Do you think Raw is going to be on Netflix for 15 years?
No.
Come on, man. Use your brain.
Yeah. Case in point. Paramount gave UFC $1.1 billion a year and is not even going to sell pay-per-views, right? Like, you might be able to maybe get close to making that back if you're selling pay-per-views because they do a lot of pay-per-views. But that's just
and well on pay-per-view.
Yes, they're still a monster on pay-per-view. So yeah, you might be able to get that back if you're doing $70 pay-per-views and you're doing two a month, you know? You might be able to get to $1.1 billion and you do product placement, advertising, you know, new subscriptions, all that stuff, but there's no way they're making that back.
And they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care because money is fake to them. It's just all about access to power, and that's what the fuck Larry Ellison is doing. He's trying to buy up all these media conglomerates that way he can push his agenda, and he's got CBS News, 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes just did a puff piece on Dana White. I'm just like, this used to be the greatest news show in the history of the world, and they just did a puff piece on Dana White.
Yeah, Barry Weiss is now the new director of news for CBS. The problem is, Mike, I have a friend who sends me these AI videos that are horrifyingly realistic.
Hey, I hope whoever that friend is understands that there's some baby pygmy in Bangladesh that can't have a cup of water today because of that video. I hope they understand that.
They're remarkably entertaining. Yeah. But like, that's the thing though, is we're Neil deGrasse Tyson. My kid wants to be an astrophysicist, so he's like super into Neil deGrasse Tyson. So I get all this Neil deGrasse Tyson like stuff on my feed. He said, and he's a great call, we're reaching a point of post-truth where we're going to assume that anything we see is AI. Everything is fake. So what that means is now a lot of people be scared by this. And he was like, no, what this means is people are going to stop getting their news this way. And it's going to change the way we consume news is going to be different. Again, what does that mean? Nobody knows quite yet. But we're going to see a video and assume that's fake.
Yeah.
And but I watched, news is going to be real.
Yeah. I watched watched one of those AI videos today. I didn't make it, but I watched one where it was Tupac on Raw cutting a promo on Biggie, and it was Tupac. Like, you're what? No, it's like it was legitimately like that was actually Tupac. Like, you're watching that. It was wild how
some asshole sent me Elvis and Kurt Cobain doing a unplugged duet.
That looked pretty good too, actually.
It looked amazing.
Only a sick person would want to watch Kurt or Elvis in his 50s. Singing a duet with Kurt Cobain on Unplugged show.
Honestly, I wished it actually did. I watched this, I'm like, I wish this was real. But that's the problem, is like, we're not going to be able to trust anything. Nothing. Right. So when you trust, this is the thing, we're going to reach a point where you trust nothing. Then how do we get information? Nobody knows the answer to that yet.
Yeah. Yeah. We have no idea. So I just want to hammer this ratings thing home. So I did pull some data. So Nielsen was doing a panel only meeting. So they had families that were signed up and they were covering about 40,000 homes. And
our buddy Wade was one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And David Bixenspan. I think he put, I'm not on Blue Sky, but it was shared in a group chat that I'm in. David Bixenspan brought it up on Blue Sky that he thinks that maybe pro wrestling fans were being overcounted because pro wrestling fans are more aware of what Nielsen boxes are. And they were signing up so that way they could watch their favorite wrestling show and actually help their favorite wrestling show. And we know that that's happened because we do have a friend, Wade, that's a big pro wrestling fan who had a Nielsen box. And he said, hey, he told me one time, he was like, hey, Mike, I didn't get a chance to watch Impact tonight. I think the numbers are going to be down tomorrow. And sure enough, they were down by like 20% from the week before. And yes. And so it was such a small sample size. So now the new one, big panel, or big data plus
big
panel.
Data. Yeah.
So big data is all the streaming services, the TVs, the Apple TVs, Amazon Fire Sticks, your devices. They're actually covering upwards of what, 75 million devices. A huge sample size. So I say all that to say they're taking that and they're brushing it up against the old school stuff. They're blending the two together. I get the feeling that the numbers that we're having right now is probably the most accurate depiction of what ratings we can get right now. And what we were getting before was mostly horseshit from back in the old school Nielsen stuff.
I think you're right. And I think that the idea that wrestling fans would like, look at, you know, what the great anecdote for this would be Cage Match. When Tony Khan started talking about Cage Match, all of a sudden the ratings on like WWE Cage Match stuff went up because those people became aware of Cage Match.
Yeah.
So they went there to make sure what they liked was protected. So, and Bix is unique with this because his dad, that was his business. Like when Bix was growing up, Bix's dad worked in this. So Bix's dad, I don't
really
know if they were Nielsen.
Okay.
Or like this is what Bix's dad did. He worked in the TV business end of things. So again, I've learned a lot about this. I've learned from listening and reading Bix's work. So if Bix is saying that look like wrestling fans are oversampled, I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
And the new ratings seem to bear that. So this is why Nielsen ratings have never been the gospel, but it's the gospel that everybody kind of accepts because everyone's playing off the game.
Right. I don't think anybody ever really fully trusted the data, but it was all the data that we had.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So that's why whenever people will suggest that AEW Dynamite is doing so well on Max when we don't have the data, I have a hard time even accepting that because we just don't have, I haven't seen the numbers. Like, no, like I know BJ had some data, but a lot of people kind of pushed up against that. And we like BJ and we trust BJ, but you know, we just didn't get enough people saying the same thing to where we can kind of completely like trust that data. You know what I mean?
I believe someone told BJ that.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that the way that it was counted, it was probably counted a lot like, and I think Zarian said that he thinks that the way that it was counted is a lot like the way that YouTube is counted. Is like, you know, if you watch for a second, then it counts as a view. And so I still have, like, every time I go into Max and I want to watch AEW on Max, I have to go and search for it, or I have to go into the sports thing. It's not on my front page, but you know what is on my front page? Superman movie, real time, Superman the animated series. I watch a lot of Josh Gates and I watch Mysteries at the Museum on there. Okay, I'm fucking old. I get it. I'm old Caucasian. I watch old Caucasian shit. And like that stuff's on my front page. Dynamite is not. I have to go to the sports tab or I have to like search for it. I don't think that they're like 500,000. I don't think that we're there. You know what I mean?
I don't know, but I do know that this week that WB had no problem announcing that Superman had crushed all of their 10-day streaming records.
Yeah.
Superman was the most streamed thing in HBO Max history for the first 10 days. And right.
You're welcome, HBO, by the way. Yeah.
They are, because I did the same thing. My kid loves that movie. It's an awesome movie. So they have no problem releasing that information. If they were super happy about it, they'd tell people. But that's the thing. It's like, who are we to I mean, Netflix always says stupid ratings too. 8 billion people watch Stranger Things. Like, I mean, they do. It doesn't mean anything.
I think there is probably a handful of people that watch Stranger Things multiple times. And we'll leave with this. So I watched Superman the Animated Series episode 1.
Good, right?
And yeah, it's a good show so far. I really like it. And so Superman's parents, like Superman's a baby in this one, and his parents are in Krypton, right? And his dad is some type of politician, right? And he's got the council together. The world's about to end, right? And he has a way to save everybody. But no one wants to listen to him. They're listening to an AI computer called Brainiac. Now, this is 30 years ago, JD. They're listening to Brainiac, the AI computer, and the humans are trusting the computer more than they trust Superman's dad, who has like a legitimate way to save everybody. But no, they said Brainiac's like, no, this is fake. None of what he's saying is true. Ends up trying to get him arrested, right? And then turns out Brainiac was just lying because he's trying to get rid of everybody so he can have total power. And yet here I am watching Tupac videos on WWF Raw 1998, and they're getting ready to fucking take over. So there you go.
First of all, this is you're in for such a treat. Brainiac becomes one of Superman's greatest villains ever. And this particular interpretation of Brainiac is my favorite version of Brainiac. Like, you're getting other side of JD here. This version, like, I think this version of Brainiac, if the rumors are that the next Superman movie is going to be a Superman villain that has never been in film before, and it sounds like it's going to be Brainiac. Knowing James Gunn, I really hope that they lean in and do this version of Brainiac, because this version of Brainiac becomes a robot, essentially, like a killer robot. And he's awesome. He's so cool. I love Brainiac. So I hope that they kind of steer into this, and I think that it's very apropos of where we are now. Like, James Gunn swears to God he wasn't doing Palestine and Israel in that movie.
He was. he 100% was. Yeah.
But, you know, I just, you know, he could say, oh, I wasn't doing it. I, you know, I hope that's kind of where they go. That's a great comparison, Mike. I appreciate that.
Yeah. We were talking about AI. All right. Hold on. Maria says, anybody see that AI actress? No, I have not. I know what you're talking about. But
spooky, spooky, spooky.
Yeah, it is creepy. But I think AI can be good. Like, some idiot can type in Lee Harvey Oswald does an interview from his jail cell proclaiming his innocence and blaming the whole thing on a UFO conspiracy and the CIA. And then it comes up and it looks like it's a movie from 1963.
Sure did, man. Sure did.
And that's Oswald's voice. Looks just like him. It is super authentic, and it said exactly what I told it to say, or the hypothetical if I was one to do that. I don't kill baby pygmies in Bangladesh. That's not me, okay?
I showed my wife that, and she's like, what is that? And I'm like, God damn it, you can't appreciate any of these jokes. Like,
yeah.
this is Lee Harvey Oswald blaming. I'm never mind.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go
You should send her the one that has Abraham Lincoln doing a wrestling promo on Jefferson Davis.
I did. That's the first one I showed her. And she's like, this is what you guys do with your time. And I said, yes, it is.
It's like, this is my friend. He's a total fucking idiot.
Fully aware. Both our wives are fully aware of how stupid their friends are.
I showed it to my wife and she's like, this is stupid. It's like, you're right. It is stupid.
It looked great though. Like, and I imagine this is what Lincoln probably might have sounded like. Now, Mike sent me a video of Abraham Lincoln cutting a promo on Jefferson Davis with the Raw Is War microphone. It was really well done. Evil as fuck. Really well done.
Yeah. I'm sorry, baby pygmies in Bangladesh. My bad. I hope you get that glass of water soon. So.
Rich Craich hates us both now because of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't stand either one of us.
Yeah. But here's my thing. I think it's scummy. I think it's gross. But it's here, and it's not going away. So I'm just going to learn how to use it.
Dude, I'm a tech teacher. We just finished our AI art unit in Photoshop. And every year I have students refuse to participate. And I'm like, I get it. You got to stand for something. But as your teacher in a tech class, I have to show you this because it's part of the program. Like, and it's, you know, AI is not the future. It's here. It's the present.
You have to learn. If you're not using it, you're going to be way behind. Right. I just did a few hour training on Microsoft Copilot. Like just a few weeks ago, because our company is adopting that. And it's a useful tool. It's really good software. I used it for like a year before I got this job. So I'm like pretty well versed in how to use it. So it's good stuff.
We have to learn to control it or else we're going to let it go crazy. Like that's kind of, we're in the Wild West right now, but even the Wild West was tamed eventually.
Yes. Yep, 100%. All right, guys. Hey, little plug. Me and Joe, cousin Joe Gilbert, we are currently in negotiations to do a Tuesday night show. I also have to negotiate with my wife. But you got the NXT Showdown. He's a big NXT fan. And he hit me up. He wants to do a post show about it. So I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll think of something. Maybe do it for the Patreon. So go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. We're in negotiations to get that done. The next week next Sunday night is Bound for Glory. So we'll try to talk Bound for Glory next Sunday night and maybe even do a special show for that. But all right, guys, so that's going to do it for us this time, the Mike and JD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain.
I feel like in a.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.